Welcome to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, a stimulating look at culture, current events, faith, and politics from a Christian and conservative point of view. We don't just talk on the radio, we blog too. Check us out at caffeinatedthoughts.com. Now grab a cup of coffee and join us. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio.
Hey, welcome to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. Caffeinated Thoughts Radio is brought to you in part by Myers & Associates, serving the Midwest with industrial maintenance products and services. Call them at 515-795-3676. Myers & Associates, keeping your operations running. Welcome to another week of Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. This is Shane Vanderhart. We've got Brian Myers in studio.
And we have a special guest of sorts.
A special producer, yes.
Yes, a special producer is at the board this morning.
We will not have more Ron today. It'll be more Chris.
I'm sorry already.
We have the one, the only, Chris Roloff at the board this morning, folks.
Yeah, so if anything goes wrong with production, blame Chris.
No, that would be the right case. You know, I do a business show as well every week, and we were just talking about this. I have successfully empowered my staff to do this broadcast quite well. Ron does a bang-up job at this, so I don't know what I'm doing.
Well,
but now
neither,
I know.
Neither do we, so that really helps.
Without Ron, the show isn't being run well. That's how we know. But
you guys are
going to
need more Ron.
You need more Ron.
Yeah.
So Ron, we love you. We miss you. Thanks for tuning in on this.
Where is he, by the way?
This is his Christmas break.
Ah,
I knew that.
You know, despite what it might seem around 99.3 FM, we do love our staff. We do give them Christmas breaks, and so he's on his now.
So he's off having eggnog or something.
Probably. I don't think he likes eggnog though.
Oh.
We have got to ask him. I think he's one of the folks.
What's the matter with that boy?
Or I'm wrong and he really loves it. All I know is if he drinks eggnog, it's going to be from AE. That I know.
That goes without saying.
He's a loyalist, that Ron Carlson.
I tell you what, I went to, a friend of mine does this thing called the Red Party every December, and his mother-in-law brings in this brandied eggnog that is like wonderful.
You can say his name, you know.
Eric Gorenson. Yes.
Those are his initials, right?
Is Eric what?
Never mind. His initials are Eric Gorenson.
Have you ever had homemade eggnog? I mean, like the real thing, not boxed?
I have not.
So I discovered that the reason you put alcohol in it is to, you know, kill the disease that's in the egg. That's why that's in there.
Are you serious?
I'm serious.
Now we just do it just to get a buzz or something.
Right. Now you do it for the alcohol fun. But, you know, the boxed eggnog is it's processed. So you're drinking raw egg. So it's not going to bother you at all. Boxed. You know, they figured out a way to process that. But before, you just throw raw eggs and all this kind of stuff. But you put the alcohol in there to keep it safe.
Interesting.
Yeah. The more you know.
Yes. Learn something new every day. And forgetting about five things, so.
I've forgotten all of them.
I think the silliness for this morning has reached its peak.
I think so. So do you want to introduce our guest, or you want to talk
about... Yeah, we do have another special guest, not just the one that's sitting here at the board producing our show today. We have a special guest on the line with us, Brian Peters, currently a theological student at Puritan Reformed Theological Seminary. And Brian comes from a Baptist background, which, given our discussion on last week's show about the debate or controversy, whatever you want to call it, within the Southern Baptist Convention, we thought it might be a good idea to have Brian come on and talk a little bit about maybe Baptist church history, his thoughts possibly on the controversy itself. And then also maybe, you know, talk some theology. So welcome to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, Brian.
Thank you. A pleasure to be with you.
So, hey, Brian, I have to ask, what kind of Baptist were you?
So my background is mainline Baptist.
Oh, heretic. Oh, sorry. American Baptist?
American Baptist in background. A lot of people aren't as familiar with American Baptist as they are with Southern Baptist. This would be a member of the National Council of Churches,
yep.
What used to be the historic Northern Baptist Convention.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's amazing. American Baptist churches, I mean, if you visit one in the Northeast, probably will seem just as liberal as, say, an Episcopal church or a PCUSA church. However, in the Midwest, they're fairly conservative still, I've noticed.
Brian may take issue with you on that.
Okay, conservative and, well, not like Southern Baptist conservative, but not as liberal as what you'd see in the Northeast.
Certainly a lot of a mixture. It's a very different setup from the Southern Baptist Convention in terms of their church polity. So you can have quite a fair bit of diversity from one congregation to the next.
Right.
Brian, we had a pretty lengthy discussion on last week's show, as I mentioned earlier, about this recent debate within the Southern Baptist Convention. Were you able to hear the show last week?
Yeah, I was able to catch most of the show from last week, and I'm pretty familiar with what's been going on there. I caught a portion of that chapel message that was put out there, if you can call it that.
Okay. I haven't read the piece, but I understand Al Mohler has weighed in on this. Have you seen that piece?
No, I haven't seen that yet.
Okay, all right. We'll have to check that out. But, Brian, based on your study of Baptist church history, how would you describe it in relationship to Calvinism?
Well, that was something that I started to find, especially as I went off to the first seminary I ever attended, which was a mainline Baptist seminary out in Philadelphia. There's this thing called the Philadelphia Confession, and an organization called the Philadelphia Convention, which was the first convention, Baptist convention in North America. And it was heavily Calvinist.
What year was that? Did that occur?
Oh, that would have been in the 18th century, I believe.
Okay.
So we're talking...
It's a colonial period, then.
Yeah, in the colonial period. The Philadelphia Confession itself, which was adopted by the convention and is still on the books of many churches out there, even if they don't actually use it, was actually a version of the London Baptist Confession, which was a version of the Savoy Declaration, which all boils down to being, they basically have the Presbyterian Westminster Confession on the books with a Baptist tweak or two to it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then how do you see the controversy, as we discussed it last week, with regard to... I think Trojan horse was the word that was used. Yeah. Is that Paige Patterson's call?
That was Rick Tyler.
Okay.
Who said it was a Trojan horse.
Okay.
And he brought up, basically, drinking and different, reformed positions on baptism polity and eschatology
and alcohol
and
tobacco,
which I thought was, it's not only that they occasionally drink, but some even homebrew.
Oh no!
It's like, oh wow, that's like worse, I guess, if you homebrew.
Anyway, Brian, what do you think about all that?
Well, so while I was at my undergrad, I actually attended what used to be a Baptist liberal arts college that had the Spurgeon Library at that point in time. It wasn't really used. It wasn't really well known. And actually, the fellow who oversaw the administration of it was more of a process theist than theology. But what I later began to understand was Spurgeon was a thoroughgoing Calvinist.
Yeah.
And a lot of the roots of even the people and the institutions that a lot of those in Southern Baptist circles would identify as being kind of bastions of the Baptist faith have a lot of Calvinist influence.
Well, I think of the late British pastor Lloyd Martin Jones, too, who's Baptist.
Martin Lloyd Jones.
Martin Lloyd Jones.
Lloyd. Martin. Yeah.
Morton.
Ladies and gentlemen, my co-host needs sleep again.
Hey, yeah. Well, anyway, we eventually got there. So,
you did.
Yeah.
You did.
Anyway, everybody knows now who I'm talking about. But he was definitely a Calvinist as well.
Brian, let's get down in the weeds a little bit on the theology that's involved in some of these questions. One of the things that we briefly touched on last week was limited atonement. So when we speak of Christ's atonement being limited, Tell us what that means and what it does not mean.
Sure. So there are a lot of people, from a Reform background, especially today, who have kind of started to get away from using even the word limited in relation to atonement.
Yeah, particular atonement, right? That's the phrase we use.
Particular, definite. The basic problem with using that is that it's nice for using it in the acronym, TULIP, with the L in the TULIP, but most of us who are having these debates actually believe in some form of a limited atonement, if we want to use that sort of language. You could have an unlimited atonement, but that would be essentially universalism. Mm-hmm. If you wanted to have an atonement which was unlimited in its power, in its efficacy, and in the scope, in other words, an atonement which is applied to every single person who has ever or will ever live, well, then an unlimited atonement would be one that perfectly atones for and covers all sin and every aspect of human life and every person, so everyone's saved.
Right.
And I don't think that's really the question that's in at debate here. It's a question of a couple of other things. Do you want to limit the atonement in its scope? Do you think that biblically the atonement is made for every single person, but it's limited in its power and its efficacy? Or do you think that the atonement is made for specific sheep, for Christ's people, but it is not limited in its power and its efficacy for those persons for whom it is made? That's really the question that it comes down to.
Well, and I think one thing it's important to remember is that no Calvinist that I'm aware of would ever say that the atonement of Christ could not have, should it have been God's will, could not have atoned for every last human being that ever lived. It had sufficient saving power.
Right. Well,
certainly.
Brian, what about John 3:16? For God so loved the world that he sent his one and only son, that whoever shall believe in him shall not perish but have eternal life. Didn't Jesus die for the entire world?
And so with that verse, I wholeheartedly affirm the content of that verse. I've proclaimed that verse publicly in evangelistic outreach. I love the message that's proclaimed there, precisely because it says that all the believing ones, literally the reading there is all the believing ones, shall not perish, but have everlasting life. And that is the message of the gospel. Certainly Calvinism, Reformed theology, and this idea of a particular atonement is not in any way opposed to the idea that those who believe will be saved.
Right.
And this is the way in which God has loved this world.
So if I believe, then I'm saved. But what?
Absolutely.
Well, yeah. So, and the kind of, the you know, leads us back, well, who can believe? Who, the elect. Because, when I talk to people about this topic, it's like you can't separate it from depravity of man. If you truly believe man is depraved, you know that someone's just, people aren't like, clamoring towards the gates of heaven trying to get in. Quite the opposite, actually, right?
Right. It all starts from the idea of what is the condition of man? What's the problem that we have to come to terms with and that Christ's atonement must pose the solution or the medicine to? And if you have a high view of where we are right now outside of Christ, then you're not going to need that much in the atonement, and you're going to think that this limitation in its power is okay.
Where does this leave us with respect to the justice of God? In other words, if the elect are chosen by God from the foundation of the universe, and some are not chosen, what are we to make of the idea of God's justice? How should one respond to the claim that God isn't fair?
Sure. So we have to start with where is man in relation to God? Are we somehow out here floating in space, independent of God, completely captain of our own souls, able to do anything on our own? Or, as Scripture says, are all things upheld by the word of power of Christ? is he the one in whom we live and move and have our being? The very molecules that you're breathing in and out right now, are they held together by the word of power of Christ? If you have that view of the universe, if you realize that every aspect of our lives is a gift of God, then you start to go where the Apostle Paul goes, and you ask questions like, who has given a gift to God that it should be recompensed or given back to him again? Now, the moment that you sin against God, the moment that you in any way offend him, that you in any way reject the gift of life which you have been given, you have now done something which is completely without any way that you can return that back, that you can somehow compensate for it to him. You just put yourself in a negative balance, so to speak, that it seems like there's no way that you can ever potentially overcome.
Brian, we've got less than a minute. Let me ask you one quick question here. Can we still proclaim the gospel offer of Christ crucified for sinners indiscriminately?
Absolutely. We want to be very clear in what we're saying there. We can come to a sinner and we can say, Christ died for the ungodly. Are you ungodly? Christ died for enemies. Are you the enemy of Christ? Christ died for those who are wicked. Christ died for sinners. And if any of these describe you, then there's nothing to prevent you coming to him. If you're weary, heavy laden, if you have burdens, if you're overcome by sin and guilt, all of this is the free gospel offer, and ministers of Christ are told to go to people like that.
Amen.
And proclaim to them.
Hi, this is Brian Myers of Myers & Associates. If you're involved in maintenance at a manufacturing plant, you know how costly it can be when a machine goes down. And if the reason that machine went down is because the electronic controls on it failed, it can really be problematic if those electronics are obsolete. Well, not to worry. We represent Providence Industrial Electronics Repair, and they can get your machine up and running in no time. They repair boards, drives, servo motors, light curtains, you name it. So if you need industrial electronics repaired at your plant, or if you have other industrial maintenance needs, give me a call at 515-490-2640. That's Myers & Associates, 515-490-2640. Myers & Associates, keeping your operations running.
Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. Caffeinated Thoughts Radio is brought to you in part by Travis Riswold of Modern Woodmen of America. Call Travis at 515-883-0029, and he can help you find the life insurance
you need.
So we have a very special guest on the line, and we're shifting gears. We talked about Calvinism. Now we're going to talk about taxes. So hopefully you're not getting whiplash.
There's not really a good segue there.
No. So we have on the line Chris Ingstad, the president of Iowans for Tax Relief. And if I mispronounced your last name, Chris, I apologize. I do that often.
You nailed it.
Good.
You
good deal. It. So tell us, Iowans for Tax Relief has been around for quite a while, I know, but some of our listeners may not be aware of what you guys do. So just kind of explain to us what... give us a kind of a history of Iowans for Tax Relief, sure. Brief history, and what you guys do.
Sure. Back in the late 70s, our founder, David Stanley, had freshly come out of the Iowa legislature in both the House and Senate, always focused particularly on tax and spending issues. And he and a group of about 12 like-minded individuals decided that the taxpayer needed some representation at the Capitol. Even back then, there were a lot of folks asking for money or representing one particular interest, but they believed that the taxpayer did not have a voice at that time. So they formed Iowans for Tax Relief, and really, since then, our mission has remained the same. The specifics have changed a little bit, but it's always been to limit spending and limit taxes, and really for the benefit of all Iowans.
Okay, and we're entering a new legislative session in January, and we have a Republican-led Senate. We're going to have a Republican-led Senate and a Republican-led House. First time that's happened in quite a while. Right. So the session looks some things look possible that didn't look
doable
that didn't look that wasn't doable a couple of years ago.
Yeah, I think the word we end up talking about is opportunity. The opportunity is there, but certainly there's no guarantee.
Right.
That, look, there's a lot of folks lining up that have had some priorities in place that weren't possible. Now they are, but there's a long list of demands out there for legislators to try to address.
I had my own wish list I published a few weeks ago.
Right.
So what's your wish list?
Well,
does this have anything to do with being naughty or nice? I mean, just say it.
Let's assume that everybody's been nice, so we don't have to go down this.
All right.
I could give you a wish list about what tax reform or tax reduction would look like. The fortunate thing is a lot of our, elected officials have a similar wish list, and I think they're going to take us in a good direction. Mm-hmm. So what ITR is going to do, our first goal is really to educate voters and the taxpayer, and government's very good about putting out phrases or terminology that sometimes is maybe intentionally deceptive. For instance, this revenue shortfall issue we're facing, we hear revenue shortfall, we hear $90 million short, and the reality is that the growth is $90 million short. The state is still going to see net tax receipts growing by over 4% from the previous year. And so
it's just not to where they example. It's just not where to the it's not to the level they estimated it to be.
That's right. I mean, look, the state's still getting a nice revenue increase. They should still be able to do things. It shouldn't require some major cuts, although it will take some action to address. But nonetheless, that's just one example of as this session goes on and ideas come out, we want to make sure we're educating, like I say, the voters and the taxpayers, making sure they're cutting through any of the terminology that may be coming out and understanding exactly where proposed legislation might truly be going and how it will actually impact them. And so we see our first role is educating, but beyond that, our goals, we'd really like to work with leadership in the legislature to get something done. We don't want to stand in the way of progress by demanding that it's only our wish list that gets met. So if there's some opportunity for some real tax reform or reduction to take place, we want to be supportive of that, and our hope would be that reform or those changes would add additional taxpayer protections, and that they'd be permanent or at least very hard to undo by a future legislature.
And what are some tax reductions or what are some reforms have you heard bounced around for this session?
One that hits a lot of people's radars and I think we would generally be supportive of is on the corporate side, mm-hmm. reducing the number of credits or eliminating almost all of them, if not all of them, in exchange for a lower rate. Our top corporate tax rate is about 12%. A number of corporate taxpayers don't pay 12% because they are able to take advantage of the credits that are in place.
Right.
But not every business is the type of business that will qualify for those credits. They may not have the level of sophistication to be able to get through there. And so, I hate to use the word fairness because that implies different things to different folks. But that might be an issue of fairness. And if we could just, let's pick on that corporate credit program. If we could lower the rate, get rid of those credits, everybody's got the same level playing field and off they go.
Well, and it's a much easier thing. And it's a much simpler calculation as well.
That's right. And again, for your larger corporations that have entire teams of tax experts on their staff, they can navigate that pretty well and pretty quickly move that rate down from 12 to 6 or 8% or whatever it might be. Not every business has that luxury. So
right, and and Iowa's business climate when it comes to taxes has not been the friendliest compared to some of our border states. So, for instance, if I lived in Northwest Iowa. And I was going to start a business, I'd be thinking,
South Dakota's looking
South
pretty
Dakota
good.
Looks pretty good. So
you jump across the border there. Yeah. Yeah. And you talk about, tax climate that applies for individuals too. You know, maybe you make a short jump across the river on that side of the state. Maybe as you're retiring, you just head to Florida or Texas or one of these states that have not only a better tax climate, but an actual climate. So let's do what we can to keep people here, to keep businesses here, or to attract them even. And, you know, I'll tell you the other thing with the tax credits that we have going on, it really gets into government picking winners and losers.
That's right.
Putting the taxpayer on the hook for some of those things. And so let's move away from that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we probably, if we improved our business climate, we could probably drastically cut the Department of Economic Development, I would think.
Yeah, you know, Debbie Durham, the director of that department, does a great job with
she
the
does,
tools
yeah.
they give her. We just happen to not be huge fans of the tools they give her. But you know, she's done a lot of good things with what she's been given.
Definitely. So on the so that's corporate. How about on mm-hmm. the how about on the personal income?
Yeah, you know, the word simplification gets thrown around a lot, and in general, we'd be in favor of that. But let's not simplify ourselves into a situation that's actually worse. But ultimately, we want to find rate reductions for folks. Now, again, if it's actually a rate reduction, not just shifting the burden around from one group of taxpayers to the other.
Right.
You know, we need a little more room in the budget to be able to do that. And so maybe that means we phase in these tax cuts or these tax reductions for folks because we certainly don't want to start running a deficit because we got over aggressive with our tax cuts but didn't address spending at the same time.
Well, speaking of spending, Chris, are you if you articulated everything on your wish list, would you have an across the board spending cut as well?
You know, if you want to come up with a target, that's fine, but I don't believe that it's best to have just sort of a, you know, hey, everybody's got to cut 10%.
Right. We kind of criticized Culver when he tried to do that.
That's right, and that's not wise. You know, and you know, that's where I think a tool like zero-based budgeting works. I mean, you know, when you've got a corporation that's actually accountable to you know, shareholders, that's what they do. And it really gives you visibility to see, hey, do we need this or not? And I think if you did that and did it wisely, you'd find areas where you could make some cuts. But you know, if we don't address spending in this state, we'll never have the ability to find those tax cuts.
Well, that was one of the questions I wanted to ask you as well. Have we always been a state that operates with baseline budgeting?
Quite honestly, I don't know.
Okay.
But for the most part, that's pretty much the norm in a government entity.
That's just tragic because baseline budgeting is a vehicle that's just asking for government growth to turn into a behemoth.
Well,
right. Even well-meaning, department heads or department managers. If you give them that tool to work with, again, you can even inadvertently grow where you don't need to grow, let alone folks who may, you know, intentionally kind of grab for all that they can get.
Right, and we've seen even under, you know, the last 6 years of Governor Branstad, our budget just keeps getting larger and larger and larger. And you know, a lot of that I know has to do with school education funding and then Medicaid. For Medicare,
right.
Medicaid. So some of that is outside of their education isn't, but Medicaid, you know, is a little bit out of our control. What are your thoughts on what could realistically be reduced? I mean, just
this is not an issue about kids or the classroom, but education is the it's the biggest, right?
Right.
And it's the biggest part, and it always gets the most of the new revenues that come in. It's just a flawed expense model when you talk about an increase of say 2.5%, and they tell you we're going to have to make drastic cuts. No private business could get a revenue bump of 2.5% and come back and go, we're going to have to make drastic cuts.
Right, right.
Be addressed in that whole expense model of education. And again, it's not about taking money out of the classroom or hurting the kids. I know that's the, you know, sort of the automatic retort, but you know, we really need to look at ultimately where these dollars in education go, whether it's to administration,
right,
whether it's to facilities, or whether it's to retiree commitments we've made. And by the way, we wouldn't we wouldn't advocate for changing the commitments we've made to folks who are in retirement or under the system currently, but maybe there's a way to change that model as folks begin to come in, hired into the education system.
Definitely. Well, and looking at, IPERS, which could be a totally different subject, I mean, there's definitely some changes that need to be made there.
Right, right.
So as far as looking at Medicaid, I mean, Iowa shifted to try to privatize, and that's had some, I think, mixed results and
certainly mixed reviews.
Mixed reviews. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts as far as moving forward? Obviously, what they do at the federal level with Obamacare will have a lot to say with what we do, in the state. But are there ways to improve the system that we, the course that Governor Branstad and the legislature set us on?
I think there's always ways to improve it, and frankly, the course that the governor set us on, which again allowed us to meet some budget obligations that we really did find cost savings, but I think it's too early to tell ultimately how effective that is. That's been in place for, a year or two now is all. So we'll see, and if we can adjust it as we go and keep an eye on it, I think we'll be all right. But credit to the governor and the legislature for moving in a direction that allows us to realize some of those savings. Because again, as we've talked about, we've got an extremely tight budget as it is, and it keeps growing. So that was one way to rein in a little bit of that growth.
Great. Everybody, at least the federal level, I know of different offices or departments I would like just to see gone. If I could wish them away, I would say, be gone. We don't need you. Is there anything at the state level for you? I know I'm asking you to throw a rhetorical bomb out there, but, I'm just kind of curious. Where do you see us at the state level wasting money?
I don't want to say waste because wherever those dollars are being spent to that department, to that cause, to that person, they're really, really important. So that's maybe not fair. But in general, we need to tighten our belts and sort of create a little bit of a surplus, a little bit of a rainy day, not always spend the max like we do it in our own households, right? We probably create a savings account. We have a rainy day fund. We hopefully don't spend every last bit that we intend to earn, so we avoid a situation like where we are now, where we find out revenue is growing just slightly less than we thought, and we've got to make somewhat drastic cuts. So I don't want to put any department or area
good answer
crosshairs there. But I mean, hey, as we're doing this, let's not max out our spending to
right.
match our income and then really have to scramble and find that.
We're almost out of time. What's your website real quick?
Taxrelief.org.
That's easy to remember, taxrelief.org. This is Caffeinated Thoughts
Thanks,
Radio.
Chris.
Thanks, Chris. We'll be right back.
Thanks, guys.
Hi, this is Brian Myers. When I needed a better life insurance plan, I found it with Travis Risvold of Modern Woodmen of America. When I first met Travis, he wasn't like some other life insurance agents that can be pushy and try to get you to buy something. Travis just made himself available to me. That was it. He told me to let him know if and when I needed anything, and he stayed in touch. When the day came and I did need to make some changes with my life insurance, Travis met with me and walked me through several options so I could make an informed decision. Ultimately, it was the best decision for my situation. So if you need a better or the best life insurance plan for you, call my friend Travis Risvold with Modern Woodmen. His number is 515-883-0029. Travis Risvold with Modern Woodmen. He can help you find the life insurance you need. Call him at 515-883-0029.
Welcome to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, a stimulating look at culture, current events, faith, and politics from a Christian and conservative point of view. We don't just talk on the radio, we blog too. Check us out at caffeinatedthoughts.com. Now grab a cup of coffee and join us. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio.
And Caffeinated Thoughts Radio is brought to you in part by Crosswalk Ministries with Scott Owen, who offers biblical counseling and conciliation. Give him a call at 515-292-7141 or go to crosswalkcounseling.org. Hey, this is Shane Van Aert with Brian Myers back for our third segment.
And now we're ready for our news rundown, otherwise affectionately known as news you can use.
That was my sound effect.
I guess we need to get a sound effect for that.
Yeah, it's kind of the trumpet fanfare sort of thing.
Kind of like a news ticker, which nobody has anymore.
That's what I was going for.
Oh, a trumpet? Okay.
First up from the New York Post. Celebrities are teaming up to beg Republicans. Let me repeat that. Beg Republicans in the Electoral College.
I just want them to fulfill their pledge and move away.
Yeah, I probably would second that motion, Mr. Vanderhart. However, that is not in our news piece this morning.
Okay.
Okay. They're begging Republicans in the Electoral College to vote against President-elect Donald Trump, pledging their respect for potential heroes. Heroes, okay? A slew of other has-been and B or C-list celebrities have piled on, calling for 37 conscientious Republican electors to swing the December 19th Electoral College vote away from Donald Trump. The Republican is expected to win 306 votes, more than the 270 necessary to win, based on the results from last month's general election. Republican members of the Electoral College, this message is for you. Begins a preachy Martin Sheen. Remember Martin Sheen?
Mm-hmm.
He played a president on TV.
Yes.
As you know, our founding fathers built the Electoral College to safeguard the American people from the dangers of a demagogue and to ensure that the presidency only goes to someone who is to an eminent degree and down with the requisite qualifications. I'm not asking you to vote for Hillary Clinton, some in the video say. Just don't vote for Trump. As you know, the Constitution gives electors the right to vote for any eligible person, a celebrity in the video states.
That's not necessarily true. It depends on their state law.
Each state has their own rules, huh?
Right. Well, and that's the beautiful thing of it, and this is why...
It's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, and we'll get into that with the next... As a matter of fact, I'll withhold my comments here because we could drill down on why national popular vote is not a good idea.
All right. We'll do that right away. Next up from Caffeinated Thoughts. We know those guys. Twice failed Democratic congressional candidate Jim Maurer, defeated badly by Congressman Steve King in 2012 and Congressman David Young in 2016, has launched a PAC today that would destroy Iowa's influence in the presidential election, not to mention our republic. His PAC, the Majority Rules, that's the name of the PAC, the Majority Rules, focuses on getting states to adopt a compact that would circumvent the Electoral College by encouraging states to pass laws that would allocate electors based on the national popular vote.
Yeah, and what they're trying to do is get enough states to make up 270. So, you know, how those state, you know... It doesn't matter. As long, you know, whoever wins the popular vote will win. Period.
Does that sound like a good idea to you?
No, it's not. And the majority rules, just the name of his pack. First of all, Mr. Maurer, get a real job. Seriously. Because I know
he runs
just,
for office for a living.
Huh? What, are you going to move to Iowa's first congressional district to run again? You know, I mean... this guy just needs to go away. I don't know how badly you need to be beaten to show that you're completely irrelevant, out of touch with Iowans.
Hey, Chris, do you think he's telling us how he really feels? Is he holding back?
Just a little bit.
So anyway, the majority rules. No, the Electoral College was designed to prevent the tyranny of the majority.
Well, that is what a republic is all about. Is to protect the minority from the tyranny of the majority.
Right, and the reason why we don't want to get rid of the electoral... First of all, if you want to get rid of the Electoral College, go about it the proper way and submit a constitutional amendment and see if you get that passed. Mm-hmm. Good luck with that. But the reason they know they can't, so this is why they're trying to slime ball move, mm-hmm. Okay, first of all, if a state will disenfranchise its voters, if it, in some instances, will ignore
the winner of their state's popular vote in favor of the national popular vote. I think that's that's atrocious to do that.
I agree.
Secondly, states have different election laws. We don't have one presidential election every 4 years. We have 51 presidential elections every 4 years. Each state has their own laws when it comes to early voting, when it comes to felons voting, when it comes to the registration process, when recounts happen. I know I'm missing some things, but you want to talk about the potential for lawsuits. Wait until you do this, and then you're going to see some major lawsuits.
Well, I don't know about you, but one thing that really bothers me, this whole notion, is knowing that we would have population centers on the West Coast and in the Northeast, basically running the country over the top of all the rest of us.
Yeah, Hillary Clinton won by almost 3 million, won the popular vote by almost 3 million votes. So what? 4 million of those votes, she beat Trump by 4 million votes almost in California. One state.
Alone. Yeah.
One state. If he had performed better in California, that national popular vote would have been gone.
Next up, this is from The Express, which is a website. May even be a newspaper, I'm not sure, but it's definitely a website in the UK. 1,000 Muslims block London streets chanting Allahu Akbar to demand Islamic caliphate. 1,000 Muslims. The street outside the empty embassy in Belgrave Square, London, was closed off as it filled with protesters and Islamic leaders chanting loudly and calling for America to be punished over Aleppo. The demonstration became an alternative to an official rally calling for an end to the bloodshed in Syria outside Downing Street.
Was this the Syrian embassy that was empty?
Wasn't in the piece, at least isn't here in this one. But
okay.
During the speeches, which lasted almost an hour, the crowd chanted Allahu Akbar, God is the greatest, and cheered for those calling for a global caliphate. A poet invited to talk shouted, we need a caliph who will clean up these streets, who will smack up armies and bring back fighting. Backhand your missiles back to your land. That's the plan. World domination at hand. We can expand and take out these fools. Oh, boy.
The religion of peace, people.
Yeah. I just don't understand why we're not a little nervous about trying to open up our borders when we know there's an element of this
is part of jihad. Jihad isn't always violence. Jihad is sometimes people... It's Muslims coming in and following the rules.
Well, they can come in and just take the place over by attrition.
By population. They just end up, you know. So that's something that you know, we need to be mindful of.
Lastly, this is from Politico. State Democrats will never vote to repeal Obamacare, but once the deed is done, a surprising number of them say they're open to helping the Republicans replace it.
That doesn't really surprise me.
Well, no, it doesn't, but it's still kind of cool. If it makes sense, I think there will be a lot of Democrats who would be for it, said Senator Claire McCaskill of Missouri. As Republicans aim to make good on their years-long vow to quash Obamacare and replace it with their own health care vision, they'll have to do something Democrats were never able to do. They're going to bring members of the opposite party on board.
And that's what we need to do. Bipartisan doesn't have to be a bad word. Hey, this is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. We'll be back in a moment.
Come give me a kiss. Put me on the cover of the Rolling Stone, Uptown, Down Home American Kids.
I'm sorry if what I said offended you, but you made me mad. Can we just forget this and move on? I'm Scott Owen with Crosswalk Ministries of Central Iowa, and it's time to pause for peace. Apologies are critical to conflict. They can either open the gate to a path of forgiveness or slam you into the ditch of bitterness. An apology like the one in our opener can cause damage because it does not request a change of relationship, but rather places the blame on the recipient and sidesteps the issue. There is no indication that the person really sees his own contribution to the problem, and no hope is given for change. A true apology communicates understanding, remorse, and a commitment to change. An excellent guideline is Peacemaker Ministries' 7 A's of an Apology. You can find the 7 A's at our website, crosswalkcounseling.org. Or to get coaching for your big apology, call us at 515-635-5465. That's 515-635-5465.
Take advantage of the marketing potential within social media for your company or organization, but you're not so sure how? Let me help. My company, 415 Communications, is a social media consulting firm that works with groups like yours. Go to 415communications.com or give me a call at 515-321-5077.
And now we've come to Chris Roloff's favorite part of the show.
It's true.
We are about to share a story that is truly unbelievable. Yet, you know it must be true because... All right. This is from NJ.com. A New Jersey state trooper has been suspended without pay after an internal investigation found he was pulling over women to ask them out on dates and falsifying police records to cover it up. Authorities said Marcus Prather, maybe Prather, I'm not sure, 37, was arrested Friday on records tampering charges and released without bail, according to the State Division of Criminal Justice, which brought the charges. Officials say the State Police Office of Professional Standards began investigating the trooper after several women lodged complaints about his behavior on the road. The investigation found, quote, a pattern of pulling over young women between the ages of 20 and 35 and soliciting them to go on a date with him or give him their phone numbers, unquote. Prather is accused of turning off his wireless microphone during his encounters with the women and falsely reporting that it had malfunctioned. He's also accused of lying about the gender of the motorists he pulled over in state police computer logs to hide the fact that he was targeting young women. In addition to the women who came forward to lodge complaints, state authorities say they identified others during the course of their investigation who had been pulled over by Prather and gave statements outlining similar alleged conduct. Is this guy desperate or what?
Desperate would be a word for it. I'm just like, dude.
The guy can't get a date without pulling these gals over on the interstate or whatever.
It's like, have you heard of like, what's Match.com? Or, I mean, come on.
The question I have is how many of them had to pay fines?
No doubt. Oh, you're not going to go out with me? Okay, well, hey, you were 10 over. I'm going to write you a ticket.
Yeah, right. Not only are they assaulted by that, by being hit on it, by cop, you know, that's going to be, you know, awkward. I hate being pulled over. Right. If I was pulled over by a police officer of the same or opposite gender, and I'd be nervous, and then they tried to solicit me on a date, it'd be so
especially if it's
shocking.
The same gender. That would be shocking.
Either way.
Well, as I read this, I'm not sure he gave any of them tickets, or certainly, I mean, we don't have any information with respect to how many tickets were actually written to these gals that he was hitting on.
Well, how does he targets between the age of 20 and 35. How does he determine this? Does he run their license plate? I mean, what does he do?
He's got to pull up alongside him and have a look.
Hey,
seriously, that's what the guy's got to be doing. He's got to be pulling up alongside of him. So, oh, there's a babe.
He said, I'm pulling you over because you're smoking hot.
You know what? It really changes the answer to that question. Do you know why I pulled you over?
Yes.
No, officer, I don't.
Well, honey, you all about to find out.
Yeah.
Oh,
it's a yeah.
What are you gonna do? And this is in New Jersey too. This doesn't sound like something would happen in New Jersey. I don't know.
I don't know. I think a lot happens in New Jersey. Well,
I agree
that
with
doesn't
that.
Happen
but there'd
elsewhere.
Be all kinds of corruption. But this just seems too weird for Jersey. Okay.
Yeah.
Corruption would be one thing. But
so you're saying New Jersey doesn't have weirdos?
Well, not exactly.
I just wonder what possesses somebody to do this? That they think,
well, the guy's desperate.
This is a good idea.
You send your You Can't Make This Stuff Up ideas to story@caffeinatedthoughts.com. We'll give you the credit or the blame if we use your suggestion on the show.
Thanks, everybody. We'll see you next week.
Take care.